how strong is a name that most fans hear and say, who? Or, oh yeah, the fake name Qyburn gave the Undead Mountain. What was it? Robert Strong? Or one of those houses that fell to the Harrenhal curse? Yet, there's one person who has an incredible interest in that minor house from the Riverlands, George R. R. Martin himself. Since he debuted House Strong in A Feast for Crows, he has been drastically increasing the role of the Strongs. Fire and Blood was their coming out party, where the Strongs received more time on the page through Breakbones, Lucamore the Lusty, Laris the Clubfoot, Lord Lionel, Alice Rivers, and others than many fan-favorite houses. And not only just appearances in the text, they have major roles in history of the Seven Kingdoms. Between the named Strongs in 131 years since Aegon's conquest, they had a frankly ludicrous amount of titles. They had two Hands of the King, one Master of Laws, one Master of Whispers, one Lord Confessor, one Kingsguard, the Sworn Shield and Leader of the Blacks, Captain of the King's Landing City Watch, numerous famous knights and fighters, an almost maester, a witch queen, and three heirs to the Iron Throne, only one twist of fate away from being crowned kings themselves. They were incredibly accomplished, but the question remains, why the focus on House Strong? What do they have going for them that makes our author make up more and more arcs and characters for this minor house that is thought to be extinct for more than 100 years by the time a Game of Thrones rolls around? The answer is that the seed is strong. A good exercise before you dive into analyzing history and characters and events is to stop and take a hard look at the sigil and name of a house. Oftentimes, Martin gives hints to the history, ancestry, region, and characters of a house through these means for sharp-eyed readers to pick up on. From just the sigil, we can surmise that the Strongs are an ancient, likely First Men house with strong connections to nature in the River Trident. The sigil of House Strong is three vertical stripes of red, green, and blue on a white field, as you can see here. A very basic design, one that feels old and easy to paint on a shield when you compare it with the Targaryen dragon, or the skulls and flames of House Ghost Rider, Koharis. Signaling that this is a very old house and sigil, these stripes likely painted on thousands of years of shields and tunics before the rise of more modern decoration techniques. The stripes themselves tell us a lot more about them as well. These are actually the three forks, green, red, and blue, of the Great River Trident joined as one. These kind of depictions of nature in simple ways is a classic hallmark of old First Men houses. It also tells us where in Westeros the Strongs were likely originally from. Likely somewhere along the Trident itself, between the Inn at the Crossroads and the Bay of Crabs. Or, given the joined forks, they may have been one of the legendary Kings of the Trident, when ancient past conquered and ruled all the land between the forks, with their sigil showing off their lands. Interestingly enough, we know as well that the Trident and the Forks have moved over time, so with a house as old as the Strongs, their ancestral home may be nowhere near the current riverbeds. Notably, the Trident used to run alongside the Inn of the Crossroads as recently as the Blackfyre Rebellions.
One of the dragon's heads washed up on the Quiet Isle many years later, though by that time it was red with rust. The innkeep never hung another sign, so men forgot the dragon and took to calling the place the River Inn. In those days, the Trident flowed beneath its back door, and half its rooms were built out over the water. Guests could throw a line out of their window and catch trout, it said. There was a ferry landing here as well, so travellers could cross to Lord Harroway's town and Whitewall's.
In addition to the general location of their ancestral home, this sigil also shows that House Strong has a strong connection with nature itself. Rivers are the lifeblood of civilization, like the Mother Rhoyne in Essos, or the branching, twisting Mander River in the Reach, in real life as well. Many of the oldest civilizations like the Sumerians, Egyptians, and Indus grew up on the banks of rivers. The Strongs are the river itself, powerful, ever-changing, relentless, fertile, and even time itself, as Bloodraven describes to Bran.
Time is different for a tree than for a man. Sun and soil and water, these are the things a Weirwood understands, not days and years and centuries. For men, time is a river. We are trapped in its flow, hurtling from past to present, always in the same direction.
and then we can look at their name and come to much the same conclusions. Martin explicitly names the Strongs here in this video as a classic example of a first man name, alongside the Starks of Winterfell and the long dead Kings of the Rivers, House Mud.
Patterns. I also wanted to show the ethnic groups. So, you know, the I have successive waves of invasion that have hit Westeros in this backstory, if you read its history. And, of course, they started out with the first men, and the first men tend to have very simple descriptive names, like Stark, or Strong, or Mud, or, you know, where they're named after something.
House Strong's name may have a source in the Age of Heroes, as many long-lived First Men houses do. The Strongs most likely take their name from Artos the Strong, an ancient heroic warrior from the Riverlands spoken of with the likes of Florian the Fool. There's only two other characters named Artos in the books, though. Yet, they are from the North, not the Riverlands, which seems a bit odd. For instance, almost all Brandons are in the North for Bran the Builder, and most of the Garths are in the Reach for Garth Greenhand. The presence of the name Artos outside the Riverlands suggests that there may be a direct connection between the ancient families of the North and Artos the Strong. And then we get the most famous Artos, Artos Stark, known as the Implacable, who won the Battle of Long Lake against the King Beyond the Wall, Raymond Redbeard, after his brother Lord Willem Stark fell in battle. Artos Stark was a great hero and a peerless warrior of his time, spoken of the same way as Cregan Stark and Artos the Strong. His deeds were so great that he is one of the very few Starks to receive a statue in the crypts of Winterfell without being a lord or king of Winterfell. In addition, there's the often pointed out fact linking the names Stark and Strong. Stark in German translates into English as Strong, so when we get Artos Stark, his name directly translates as Artos Strong and vice versa. In both regions, we have separate heroes with the same name and type of deeds. These connections between Strong and Stark are strengthened by an unusual source, Jace Velaryon, a bastard child of Harwyn Breakbone Strong and Queen Rhaenyra Targaryen. Jace traveled to Winterfell in order to forge an alliance during the Dance of the Dragons. By this time, Cregan Stark had become Lord of Winterfell, and Jace arrived on his dragon Vermax. But the last time a dragon landed at the home of the Starks, Lord Alaric was noticeably chilly towards Queen Alysanne. Instead this time, according to Munkin, Jace was greeted like an old friend, or perhaps a long-lost relative.
Mankin's True Telling says that Cregan and Jacaerys took a liking to each other, for the boy prince reminded the Lord of Winterfell of his own younger brother, who had died 10 years before. They drank together, hunted together, trained together, and swore an oath of brotherhood, sealed in blood.
Something connected between the two young men in this tale. It even mentions that Jace reminded Cregan of his own brother. The only time anyone has ever mistaken a Targaryen for a Stark is Jon Snow, so it seems likely that Jace's strong features and personality endeared him to the Starks, as if they recognized their own. Although, according to Mushroom and his HBO version of Jace's time in Winterfell, he acted in a way that would have made his ancestors Lucamor and his father Breakbones proud.
His account introduces a young maiden, or Wolf Girl as he dubs her, with the name of Sarah Snow. So smitten was Prince Jacaerys with this creature, a bastard daughter of the late Lord Rickon Stark, that he lay with her of a night. On learning that his guest had claimed the maidenhead of his bastard sister, Lord Cregan became most wroth, and only softened when Sarah Snow told him that the prince had taken her for his wife. They had spoken their vows in Winterfell's own Godswood before a heart tree, and only then had she given herself to him, wrapped in furs amidst the snows as the old gods looked on.
It seems at this point that the Strongs may very well be the long-lost cousins of the Starks of Winterfell, left behind in the Riverlands as the family continued north ages ago. Perhaps they were separated by the Hammer of Waters that shattered the Neck, or during the Andal invasion. Two branches of the same family tree, or two forks of the same river, that diverged over time. And then when we finally examine what Martin has written about the origins of House Strong, it seems that their sigil and name do line up perfectly with this analysis.
Thus did the flower of House Strong, an ancient line of noble warriors boasting descent from the First Men, come to an ignoble end in the ward at Harrenhal.
Overall, this seems to be the most defining trait of the Strongs. They are extremely First Men. Extra First Men, as the kids say these days. The First Men have their own set of values, heroes, and myths, and ways of living that the Andal invaders couldn't drive out entirely. For one, rather than worshipping the seven-faced god of Andalos and Hugor of the Hill as their founders, the First Men turned to Garth the Green and his legendary children from the Age of Heroes. Garth was a horned green god who had a deep connection to nature and could make plants bloom in his presence, and was known for his similar effect on women.
Garth Greenhand brought the gift of fertility with him. Nor was it only the earth that he made fecund, for the legends tell us that he could make barren women fruitful with a touch, even crones whose moon blood no longer flowed. Maidens ripened in his presence. Mothers brought forth twins or even triplets when he blessed them. Young girls flowered at his smile. Lords and common men alike offered up their virgin daughters to him wherever he went, that their crops might ripen and their trees grow heavy with fruit. There was never a maid that he deflowered who did not deliver a strong son or fair daughter 9 moons later. Or so the stories say.
His children as well, notably Boris the Breaker of the Reach and House Bulwer, grew black horns by drinking the blood of oxen. The idea of horn lords and gods is one of fertility and passion, in real life as well. Various religions have the idea of these horn gods that represent sexuality, fertility, nature, and life and death itself. A man with a large sexual appetite being called horny is a direct allusion to these figures. And we have Bors' title shared with Brandon the Breaker, the legendary king of winter that defeated his supposed bastard brother, the Night's King, strengthening the connection with First Men and violence. The other figure of Garth for our purposes, though, to focus on is the progenitor of House Stark itself, Brandon of the Bloody Blade. Although Bran the Builder is often called the founder of House Stark, he more built the Castle of Winterfell while the lineage was traced back to Garth through this other legendary Brandon. Brandon's blade became bloody because he supposedly killed so many children of the forest at Blue Lake that it was renamed Red Lake. An impressive accomplishment, but there's another meaning for bloody blade that we learned from a much more recent Brandon Stark.
Brandon was never shy about taking what he wanted. I am old now, a dried-up thing, too long a widow, but I still remember the look of my maiden's blood on his cock the night he claimed me. I think Brandon liked the sight as well. A bloody sword is a beautiful thing, yes. It hurt, but it was a sweet pain.
Again, like Bors, a child of Garth is associated with massive bloodshed and battle with his strength as a bull, and heavy sexual connotations to their behavior. The biggest example of this is the disgraced Kingsguard of Jaehaerys I, Sir Lucumore Strong, later called the Lusty. Lucumore won his spot in the Kingsguard by winning a massive melee celebrating the finishing of the Dragon Pit.
Other notables who joined the melee included Sir Alyn Bullock, late of Dragonstone, Rhaegar Baratheon's brothers, Sir Boris, Sir Garron, and Sir Ronnel, an infamous hedge knight called Sir Guile the Cunning, and Sir Alastor Rain, champion of the Westerlands and master-at-arms at Casterly Rock. After hours of blood and clangour, however, the last man left standing was a strapping young knight from the Riverlands, a broad-shouldered blonde bull called Sir Lucumore Strong.
Notice the subtle call-out here to Lucumore being a quote-unquote bull, like Bors the Breaker. A massive horned beast, angry and skilled in battle. So skilled he beat back the greatest knights and fighters in Westeros. And then second, Lucumore earned his title as Lusty because he broke the Kingsguard vows historically.
Near year's end, a shameful revelation came to light that shocked both court and city. the amiable and well-loved Sir Lucamore Strong of the Kingsguard, a favourite of the small folk, was found to have been secretly wed, despite the vows that he had sworn as a White Sword. Worse, he had taken not one, but three wives, keeping each woman ignorant of the other two, and fathering no fewer than 16 children on the three of them.
That is some extreme first man behavior there from Lucamore. Although Lucamore was gelded and sent to the wall for his crimes, his 16 children were shown mercy and were formally declared as bastards and sent off to be raised at Harrenhal with his brother Lord Bywin Strong, the Baratheons of Storm's End, and the Valarians of Driftmark. The two oldest sons joined their father on his trek to the wall as well, although sans his bloody blade, thus establishing the other important part of first man archetypes, the many, 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 many bastards. Garth the Green bedded anyone and everyone, meaning all across the Seven Kingdoms there were Green Hand bastards, much like Lucamore's children. This is the reason so many houses claim ancestry going back to Garth. And this is likely the same for Brandon, as Red Lake is actually in the Reach, not the North. So there may have been a similar process of leaving children behind as Brandon and his family migrated north, eventually becoming the Starks of Winterfell. In a more practical sense, though, the First Men were known to practice the Lord's Right to First Night, or Prima Nocta. Essentially a horrible practice where lords and kings are allowed to have sex with women before their husbands on their wedding night. Although outlawed by Jaehaerys and Alysanne, this practice went on for thousands of years, especially in the unconquered north. This practice would have naturally created many, many bastards of high lords. Undisturbed first man culture specifically created as many bastard children as possible, showing that the myths of Garth and his children reflect a truth of their culture. Where Lucamore's bastards were sent, though, has some very intriguing information. First, it tells us that although Jaehaerys and Alysanne were distraught with Lucamore's betrayal of his vows, they sent his children to three of the most powerful houses in the Seven Kingdoms. Most of them were from King's Landing, and so being raised in the homes of the Baratheons, Valyrians, and Strongs would have been a large upgrade on these children's living conditions and future prospects. And it appears that Lucamore's children kept up their father's example, as the Baratheons in particular seem a bit strong themselves afterwards. The Baratheons were always fierce warriors and muscular in their youth, but after the Strong bastards showed up, they started getting massive, particularly King Robert Baratheon. Although the show makes him look shorter, Robert is actually a very strong, like 6.5 feet tall, has a powerful lust for battle and women, and even left behind the exact same number of bastards that Lucamore is known to, 16. And unlike Rhaenyra's children and the Velaryons, a child of a Strong and a Baratheon wouldn't stand out, as they both normally have darker features. Very possible that Strong seeds found their way to stay permanently in Storm's End, and George left that connection between Lucamore and Robert as a hint for the sharp-eyed reader. And we see much the same from another Strong, Sir Harwin Strong. He was a similarly massive man to Lucamore, who had a matching lust for battle and women. His size and skill in arms earned him the nickname Breakbones for his typical injuries on his opponents. His father was Master of Laws and then Hand of the King, Lord Lionel Strong, who somehow got his enormous, hard-to-control son the job of a captain in the Gold Cloaks. And it's there that Breakbones met the Realm's Delight and heir to the Iron Throne, Princess Rhaenyra Targaryen. Rhaenyra had been pining for the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, Sir Criston Cole, who, unlike Lucamore, took his vows slightly more seriously and resisted the obvious attraction between the two. Breakbones had no such problems with bedding a princess, and although the exact timeline was disputed in Fire and Blood, it can be certain that Rhaenyra and Breakbones were a couple despite her marriage to Sir Laenor Velaryon. Her first three children all were born with oddly strong features for the supposed double Valyrian parent match.
Born in the waning days of 114 AC, the boy was a large, strapping lad with brown hair, brown eyes, and a pug nose. Sir Laenor had the aquiline nose, silver-white hair, and purple eyes that bespoke his Valyrian blood. Laenor's wish to name the child Joffrey was overruled by his father, Lord Corlys. Instead, the child was given a traditional Velaryon name, Jaehaerys. Friends and brothers would call him Jace. Septon Eustace, tells us that both Sir Laenor and Sir Harwin were at Rhaenyra's bedside for his birth. Like his brother Jace, Luke had brown eyes and a healthy head of brown hair rather than the silver gilt hair of the Targaryen princelings, but he was a large and lusty lad, and King Viserys was delighted with him when the child was presented at court. Joffrey Velaryon was as big and red-faced and healthy as his brothers, but like them, he had brown eyes, brown hair, and features that some at court called common.
Once again, we get this idea of the first men spreading their seed far and wide, and it is called out in the descriptions George is using for the three Strongs masquerading as Velaryons. Burly, lusty, big, large, strapping, brown hair and brown eyes, and a noticeable desire to prove themselves in battle. Like John Arryn notes for the inverted situation of Cersei and her all blonde children that should have been brown or black haired, the seed is strong. The classic strong features from Harwin overwhelmed the leering ones from Rhaenyra. Even the normal test for true Targaryens fail as each of the boys become dragon riders. And as if we needed any more proof for the Strongs being living embodiments of First Men myths, even Prince Jace could not control his lustiness as he went out building alliances for his mother as the Dance of the Dragons broke out. Jace was promised to Princess Baela Targaryen since he was 4, and yet his style of negotiation is decidedly strong. While he is winning the Vale for his side, the Fool Mushroom tells a tale that Lady Jane would give her loyalty to Rhaenyra if Jace could pull a Jon Snow in the cave on her. And of course, his impulsive possible marriage to Sarah Snow in Winterfell at only 15 or 16. An impulsive prince that supposedly got married very young during a war and possibly doomed his family with his choice. God, where have we seen that before? Tying this back around, though, we not only see in Jace that the Strongs tend to have very Starkish deeds, we can look at the rest of the family tree as well. Take, for instance, the first name member of House Strong, Sir Osmond Strong. Sir Osmond was raised as the third hand of the king for Aegon the Conqueror and served him effectively for 17 years. In all that time, though, we only hear of two accomplishments for one of the longest tenured hands, alongside the likes of Septon Barth, Bloodraven, and Tywin Lannister. The first was leading the campaigns against the pirate king, Sargosso San. A second, he built a wall.
Aegon at last commanded that walls be raised. Grandmaster Gawain and the Hand, Sir Osmond Strong, were given charge of the project. Aegon decreed that there should be room enough for the city to expand within those walls, and that 7 great gatehouses would defend the 7 gates, in honor of the 7.
The most famous accomplishment by far for Bran the Builder is his construction of the Great Ice Wall that divides the north. And here we have the first named of the Strongs in the story having a similar story. In fact, the King's Landing walls have never fallen since their construction by Sir Osmond. And then we get to Alys Rivers and Harrenhal. Alys Rivers was mentioned as a bastard of House Strong, although which Strong was her father is disputed. Munkin claims Lord Lionel, Hand of the King and Master of Laws, was her father, while Mushroom claims she was even older than that. A bit of an old Nan character, no one quite sure how old she is or where exactly she came from, or Melisandre with her sort of ageless appearance. What's important about her, though, is that everyone agrees she was a witch or enchantress of some kind, and that she ruled from Harrenhal. Alys fills a critical role in the Strong family history, and one that resonates with one of George's favorite writers in H.P. Lovecraft. Oftentimes, ancient houses have their histories buried and forgotten as the ages rolled along. Worship of old gods, horrifying rituals, connections with magic and horrors long forgotten are a common theme of Lovecraft's work. And with the Strongs until Alys, they seem much the same. Despite being ancient First Men, many of the Strongs were anointed knights in the Faith of the Seven. They have, over time, been trending towards fitting in with their and-all neighbors, as you would expect for survivors. But then, something changed. The Strongs are given dominion over Harrenhal and the God's Eye. Harrenhal, with its enormous 20-acre godswood and heart tree, rafters and beams made of cut-down weirwood trees, stones taken from the crumbling ruins in the Riverlands, and the Isle of Faces just across the water. It is like the Strongs were given a temple of the old gods to rule. It's noted in Fire and Blood by Queen Alysanne that she tried to convince Lord Alaric Stark of marriage alliances by saying there are old god worshippers south of the Neck too. I venture she may have been speaking of House Strong in particular. Sir Lucamore was loose-lipped and best buddy of the royal couple. It's probably Lucamore who clued her in on the Strong history and other old god worshippers still around. Lucamore gained his white cloak in 56 AC, and the royal couple made their progress north in 58 AC. Also, as noted before, both Jaehaerys and Alysanne held strong affections for Lucamore, so it seems reasonable that they talked as friends. Especially after it's noted that Lucamore had trouble keeping secrets following the return of Aerya Targaryen on Valyrian the Black Dread.
Sir Lucamore Strong had been at his post on the bridge across the dry moat surrounding Maegor's Holdfast. Shoving aside the other onlookers, he lifted the princess in his arms and carried her across the castle to Grand Maester Bennifer. Later, he would tell anyone who would listen that the girl was flushed and burning with fever, her skin so hot that he could feel it even through the enameled scale of his armour. She had blood in her eyes as well, the knight claimed, and there was something inside her, something moving that made her shudder and twist in my arms. He did not tell these tales for long, though. The next day King Jaehaerys sent for him and commanded him to speak no more of the princess.
With the long, long history of House Strong and their forgotten connections with myth and legends, it appears that gaining power and living in Harrenhal awakened something in their family in a distinctly Lovecraft way. They went from servants happy to aid the crown to people who seemed more ambitious and looking to climb the ladder of politics. Breakbones, through his relationship with Rhaenyra, almost seated the Strongs on the Iron Throne. His brother, Laerys the Clubfoot, as well as instrumental as Master of Whispers in the efforts to put Aegon III on the throne. And then it was Laerys who took the blame for killing that same king with poison. And then Alys, who went further than either of the Strong brothers and tamed a dragon for her own, and supposedly woke the beast of Harrenhal.
When Sir Daemon assured him that no one was going to laugh at him, the messenger said, "Don't come again unless you mean to bend your knees," she says. "Any man who comes near her walls will die. There's power in them stones, and the widow's woken it. Seven save us all, she has a dragon. I seen it."
It's a slow progression back from anointed knights and servants of the dragon lords into the reemergence of their first men roots. Alys in particular displays this the most. At times she is called everything from a witch to a sorceress to a poisoner, and, most importantly, the Witch Queen of Harrenhal. As discussed in my Three Wishes video with Shakespeare of Thrones, these insults and names are often used as a way of marking people as outside your culture, understanding, and religion in a similar way as the names Barbarian or Savage. She apparently also has the gifts of a Greenseer.
"My lady," Aemond answered, "she saw you in a storm cloud, in a mountain pool at dusk, in the fire we lit to cook our suppers. She sees much and more, my Alys. You were a fool to come alone."
Seeing visions in the flames, water, and sky. Sounds it's a little familiar, eh? Much and more, her tame dragon Aemond thinks. A character very reminiscent of the ghost of Highheart, directing the Targaryen kings with her visions and magics, that ends up with her Jenny marrying the crown prince, or Melisandre pointing out Stannis' future for him, so helpfully, and using her powers to make the future she wants through her chosen Valyrian. Alys even appears to use some kind of shadow baby-like magic if the stories are to be believed. Alys is being repeatedly called a witch and a woods witch and a sorceress and even witch queen of Harrenhal, but the stories back those up. Then look at her with what she's being associated with. Harrenhal is a construction of Black Harren who is in a first man, yet it also contains untold numbers of cut down weirwoods. It also sits on the God's Eye and claims dominion over the Isle of Faces and the Trident. What she's really being called is an old god priestess, a symbolic green seer and children of the forest, one that is waking up the old dead stones of Harrenhal, referencing necromancy, taming dragons, and therefore the fire of the Valyrian gods. seeing things she couldn't possibly know, and she is specifically noted as being a wet nurse for all the Strongs of her time. Alice is the avatar of the old gods, feeding the Strong's magic and empowering them, exactly like most speculate actually happened during the Andal invasions, with the Children of the Force allying with the First Men against the invaders and likely lending them some of their magical gifts against their common foe. Alice even solidifies my earlier points about the connections between the Strongs and the Starks. When she is pregnant with Aemon's child, she is found at Harrenhal in a very familiar scene for those of us that have reread Bran's Weird Visions over and over and over, trying to decode it.
Inside, she found only Alice Rivers, the wet nurse and purported witch who had warmed Prince Aemon's bed during his days at Harrenhal, and now claimed to be carrying his child. "I have the dragon's bastard in me," the woman said as she stood naked in the godswood with one hand upon her swollen belly. "I can feel his fires licking at my womb."
A naked old god-worshipping woman in the godswood of a great castle, a swollen stomach, and a baby that may one day claim vengeance, knowing Aemon's end in the god's eye. That sounds familiar. It's because this exact imagery appears to Bran Stark.
He saw no more of his father, nor the girl who looked like Arya, but a woman heavy with child emerged naked and dripping from the black pool, knelt before the tree, and begged the old gods for a son who would avenge her.
What we're seeing here is the last nail in the coffin, so to speak. Alice exists as a fascinating character who should have her own series, but she's also the final bridge between the Strongs and the Starks, an old god priestess figure that would not seem out of place in Winterfell or beyond the Wall. The weirwood roots of House Strong growing back up through the dirt after centuries playing at the Andal's games. What George is really trying to show us is the origin of the First Men in Andal Wars, and how the relatively primitive First Men held off the technologically superior Andal invaders. The Strongs are giving him a chance of showing how confused and puzzled the non-magical Andals would have felt seeing these strange men of the woods and rivers somehow fending them off despite seeming oafish and simple with base instincts. The names that Alice Rivers gets is a perfect example of the way Andal culture feels about the magic of the First Men. It's dangerous and unknown and terrifying, just like her. Lucamor isn't described as the brightest bulb in King's Landing, yet he made friends of the king and queen, and then raised his house's importance through friendship and devotion. And even from the Kingsguard, his heirs likely snuck into two most powerful families in Westeros. Breakbones nearly captured the Iron Throne for the Strongs, though not through guile or political maneuvering, but by listening to his Garth roots with Rhaenyra, when the opportunity presented itself, Laerys the Clubfoot, using his mastery of the underworld and whispers manipulations of the mind, like a green seer peering into the minds of sleepers. He's fighting wars in ways they barely comprehend and can keep up with. Even Lionel and Osmond Strong ruled as hands of the king successfully and ably for long periods of time of their kings. They are not simple. They are not oafish. The Strongs are dangerous. And more than that, showing us how First Men culture functioned and its heroes behaved outside of the grim frozen north without the threat of winter hanging over them. Many myths and legends cannot be told by the way our author works, at least not in a way that deals with his preferred topic of the human heart in conflict with itself. They're too far removed from our current story, all characters long dead with little bearing on the post-conquest timeline Martin loves using. They're more archetypes and collection of cultural values than actual living, breathing people. The Strongs, though, they're alive, and they're breathing and interacting with the exact characters and time frame that George is using. And beyond that larger purpose, they allow them to play with the idea of what happens when the Starks interact with Targaryens closely. For most of their history, the Houses of Ice and Fire narrowly avoided joining until Rhaegar and Lyanna. It's like the Strongs are an alternate history if Alaric Stark had agreed to marry his heirs with the Targaryens like Alysanne proposed. The Strongs are being given such huge attention in the latest books because George's interest in those figures in history have only increased since then. Much of the world book is dedicated to these characters and dry descriptions of their deeds, like I mentioned. In the Strongs, though, George has discovered a typically elegant solution of getting his cake and eating it too. As we eagerly await Fire and Blood Volume 2 and the continued adventures of Alice Rivers, her child of Aim and One Eye, and the secret Strong Seeds taking root in great houses, remember that this is how the First Men fight and win their battles against stronger foes. They are the Weirwoods still standing in the God's Woods. Innocuous and forgotten, but never dying, their roots invading castles and their seeds being sown far and wide. And the seeds are strong.
I hope you enjoyed this look at House Stark. I mean strong. This is actually a collaboration video I did with the excellent Disputed Lands. You should go right now to her channel and watch her companion video on the Strongs. In it, she talks about where the Strongs are in the current timeline, and how those huge, lusty, thick-as-a-castle-wall warriors survived losing their name and home. It's honestly one of my favorite theories that she resurrected just for the release of Fire and Blood. If you like this content and would like to see more, you can consider supporting me at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get access to videos and audio early, the artwork from these videos customized for your liking, special Naester-themed nicknames, your name read out at the end of videos, and more. And speaking of, let's list some of those fine people. Thank you to my Archmaester level patrons, Anissa, Brendan Beefish, June C, Nauticast, Lady Shar, Stephen Stark, Veronica F, and Johan. And to my Brown Wizard level patron, Mr. Skillen. And I would also like to give thanks to those who helped me make this video. First, of course, to George R. R. Martin, for without whom this wonderful world we play in would not exist. Second, to InDeepGeek, who graciously lent his smooth vocal work to my video. He makes fantastic content as well, and if you liked his voice, he also has a YouTube channel called The Well-Told Tale, where he reads classic works such as Frankenstein and Lovecraft. Highly suggest checking both of his channels out. And last but not least, never least, to Sanrixin, who provided the title and quote cards I used in this video. You can find her links in the description to her artwork and shop with various prints and t-shirts. What you can look forward to coming up will be a live stream on this topic with Disputed Lands and perhaps in Deep Geek, where we will go more in depth into House Strong and their mysteries than these videos can hold. Also, be on the lookout for my 5k subscriber Q&A video coming out soon, along with some possible great collaborations going into the show season. You can also find my work on the Maester Monthly podcast that I make with my fellow A Song of Ice and Fire mods, and Watchers on the Wall, where I am a feature writer. So make sure you like, subscribe, leave a comment, hit the notification bell, and tell me in the comments which member of House Strong is your favorite and why it's objectively Duncan the Tall. And with that, thank you all very much for watching.